Avenger.
The road to crime ends in a trap that justice sets. Crime does not pay.
Avenger, sworn enemy of evil, is actually Jim Brandon, a famous biochemist. Through his numerous scientific experiments, Brandon has perfected several inventions to aid him in his crusade against crime as the Avenger. Most remarkable of these inventions is the highly secret diffusion capsule, which cloaks him in the black light of invisibility. Brandon's assistant, the beautiful Fern Collier, is the only one who shares his secrets and knows that he is the man the underworld fears as the Avenger. And now, the Avenger and the Diploma of Death.
Well, Jim, Founders Day here at Rockland College certainly has brought out the distinguished alumni in full force.
Yes, Fern can point out all the celebrities to you, Inspector. She was graduated from Rockland a year ago.
Oh, no, almost 2 years ago, Jim.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Fern. 2 years ago, Inspector.
Well, I hope that lady who just sat down in front of us isn't anyone too important. Because as soon as the track meet begins, I'm going to ask her to remove her hat.
Oh, that's Amy Nottingham, the authoress, Inspector. And you'd better be polite to her, or she'll make you the villain in her next book.
Oh, look, that gray-haired man in the front row is a famous brain surgeon.
And the two men with him are politicians. You see, I know a few famous people, too.
I guess everybody enjoys a good track meet.
Jim, I thought Professor Craig was supposed to join us.
Well, he said he would, but he's probably become involved in some fascinating experiment in the chemistry lab.
Hey, isn't it time for this thing to start?
Yes, but I think they're waiting for Dean Clapper. He hasn't arrived yet.
Oh, Fern, what's the first event on the program?
Well, let me see. Oh, yes, here it is. It's the 60-yard high hurdle race.
Harold Harkness should be a cinch to win then.
Harkness? It seems to me I read something about him in papers recently.
Oh, that's right, Inspector. Harkness won the National Chemistry Prize a few weeks ago. And, by the way, his picture appeared right next to yours when you solved the Austin case.
Oh, yeah, that's where I saw it, all right.
Oh, look, Jim. I don't think they're going to wait for the dean. They're lining up the fellows for the hurdle race.
Oh, good.
Harkness is number 5, Inspector.
All right.
Keep your eye on him.
There they go.
Hey, Jim. Hey, what's the matter with Harkness?
I don't know. Why, he didn't even clear that first hurdle.
Harkness has collapsed, Jim.
Come on, Inspector. There's something wrong down there. This way.
All right.
Come on, down these side stairs. They lead to the field.
All right, excuse us. Stand back, please.
Hey, come through here. Hey, they're bringing the stretcher on the field. Tell them to hold it a minute, Inspector.
Wait a minute. Don't touch him. Police. All right, step aside. Please let us through here. See what you think, Jim. Looks to me like his neck may be broken.
No. It's even worse than that, Inspector. He's been shot in the back of the head. Harkness is dead.
Mr.
are you looking for here into the grandstands? Do you think the murderer may be hiding in here?
It's possible, Fern. But I think it's more likely that he changed his clothes in here and has already made his getaway.
Jim, it was the Stoddard who shot Harkness, wasn't it?
Yes, only one shot was fired, the one that started the race.
But in that case, well, why didn't Harkness fall right on the starting line?
Because he was a trained runner, primed for the race. When the shot hit him, he was off to an automatic start, and he ran forward with a kind of reflex motion. No one even noticed that anything was wrong until he tripped over that first hurdle.
Well, old Jake Norton is the starter, Jim. Why, he's been working here at the college for 10 years. Oh, I just can't believe he killed Harkness. Listen. What was that?
Why, it was a groan. Come on. It seemed to come from behind those benches in the corner.
Jim. Jim, it's a man. Why, he's all tied up and gagged.
He's badly hurt, Fern.
Why, Jim, that's old Jake Norton, the starter.
He was slugged from behind. Here, help me untie him, Fern.
All right. Jim, Jake always wore a jockey cap and a yellow sweater when he was on the job.
Yes. Someone must have stolen those clothes and impersonated Norton out there on the field. His gun's not here either.
Shall I get the inspector, Jim?
Yes, but call an ambulance first. Norton's in bad shape. I doubt if he'll pull through this.
Well, I just got word from the hospital, Jim. Jake Norton is dead.
Oh. Or did he regain consciousness at all, Inspector?
No. Whoever hit him meant to kill him, Jim.
Well, that means we'll have to start from scratch on these murders, Inspector.
Yes, yes, yes. Looks like we're up against the two well-planned, premeditated killings, Jim. Where do you think we should start?
We'll have to question every single person who wasn't present at the track meet. Absent students, teachers, and guests will have to explain their whereabouts between 2 o'clock and 2:45 this afternoon.
Huh? That's a big job. Let's go to work on it. Now, you two men were called back here for further questioning in this murder case because we have not been able to substantiate the alibis you offered earlier this afternoon. I'll expect you to answer all questions carefully and truthfully. I'm warning you that any discrepancies in your stories will have serious consequences. Who's first, Jim?
Robert Atwood, student. According to earlier questioning, Atwood claimed he was in the library from 12 o'clock to 3 doing chemistry research.
Hmm.
This has not been substantiated by the librarian on duty.
Okay, Atwood, how do you explain that?
Well, you see, sir, I was up in the cupola of the library. I was consulting some rare old manuscripts and books that are kept up there.
How does it happen that the librarian didn't see you?
The cupola is reached by a back staircase. A few senior honor students are given a key, and we're permitted to go and come as we please.
Were you alone there?
From 1:30 on, I was.
Who was there until 1:30?
Clarence Treat.
Who is he?
Mr. Treat is an alumnus of Rockland who lives here in town. He's writing the memoirs of Matthew Forrester, the man who financed the new library just before he died a few years ago.
I see. Treat also has a key to the cupola, huh?
Oh, yes. He does a great deal of research there, too.
May I ask a question, Inspector?
Go ahead, Jim.
Atwood, isn't it a fact that you and Harkness were the only two students who rated a key to the cupola this year?
That's right, Mr. Brandon.
And is it also a fact that such rivalry had developed between you that you were no longer even on speaking terms?
Well, yes.
Exactly what was the reason for that rivalry?
Well, since Harkness is dead, I'd prefer not to discuss that.
Inspector, since Atwood does not wish to discuss this subject, I think you'd better ask Professor Craig what he knows about it.
All right. Well, Professor Craig, suppose you answer the question.
To be perfectly frank, Inspector, both Harkness and Atwood hope to be chosen to succeed me as Associate Professor of Chemistry next term.
Oh, you mean they were gunning for your job, Professor?
You might put it that way, Inspector.
What makes you so certain of that, Professor Craig?
Well, the regular Associate Professor died at the beginning of the semester. I was elected as a temporary substitute. Harkness and Atwood were brilliant students, and both of them did all sorts of research. in an attempt to outrun me and show me up. They frequently embarrassed me before the class by posing obscure questions and problems which their wide research had uncovered. Problems which I admit I was not able to solve.
Well, that gives Atwood a reason for wanting to get rid of Harkness, all right, but also gives you a motive for wanting to get him out of the way.
But, Inspector, my job is no safer now than it was before. I told you Atwood was also a rival.
Well, that may be true enough, but your alibi doesn't stand up either, Professor.
I was in my room alone, studying, between 1:30 and 3 o'clock.
Just a minute, then, Professor. When Miss Collier and I met you on the campus just before lunch, you said you'd try to join us at the track meet.
Yes, that's right, Brandon, but why, I was merely being polite. Naturally, I didn't want the whole world to know I was literally chained to the grindstone.
All right. That'll be all for now. But hold yourselves available for questioning at any time.
Well, thank you, Mr. Treat. Your story checks with what Atwood told us. Just for the records, however, would you mind telling me what you did after leaving the library at 1:30?
I came straight home, Mr. Bradman. I went to my study to revise the notes I'd taken at the library. I'm afraid you'll have to take my word for that. I live alone here.
I see. Oh, pardon me, Mr. Treat, but is that your college ring you're wearing on your little finger?
Oh, yes, why?
Oh, I was admiring it, that's all. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Treat. What do you suppose Dean Clapper wants with us, Inspector?
I don't know, Jim. Here, this is his office.
Inspector White, Mr. Brandon, come in, please. Sit down.
Thank you.
Why did you want to see us about Dean Clapper?
I've just been informed that you have subjected Robert Atwood and Professor Craig to a second questioning, and I wish to protest it.
Protest it?
Yes. You will not find the murder of Harkness and Norton here at Rockland College, gentlemen. There are no murderers here. Rockland is almost 100 years old. The breath of scandal has never touched it. I refuse to allow you to drag my students and faculty through the mud in an attempt to locate some fanatical criminal.
Just a moment, Dean Clapper. This is a police matter, and it's not within the realm of your authority to dictate who shall be questioned. Two men were murdered here in cold blood this afternoon, and we intend to find out who murdered them.
Surely a respectable, honor student and an esteemed faculty member should be above suspicion in a violent criminal case of this kind.
No one here at Rockland or anywhere else is above suspicion, Dean Clapper. In fact, I have a few questions for you to answer.
What did you say?
The inspector would like to know where you were between 2 o'clock and 2:45 this afternoon, Dean Clapper.
Well, of all the impertinence...
I'm afraid you'll have to answer.
Yes, you weren't at the track meet, I know that.
I was at home in my study, preparing an address I'm to deliver tomorrow.
Who knows you were in a study at that time?
No one except myself. My wife and daughter had gone to the athletic field.
When did you first hear about the death of Harkness?
My daughter came running home to inform me.
What time was that?
Oh, I don't know. And I refuse to subject myself to this foolish inquisition another moment.
Then you'd better get yourself a lawyer, Dean Clapper, because we intend to get to the bottom of these murders.
Thank you.
back to the Avenger and the Diploma of Death.
Well, there's nothing here in the chemistry lab to give us any leads, Inspector.
Now, wait a minute, Fern. Look at this piece of paper I found in the back of Atwood's notebook.
What do you suppose those letters stand for, Inspector?
Yeah, hanged if I know. Capitals O-E-L, and right underneath them, capitals W-X-V. Probably two sets of initials.
Oh, and look, on the other side of the paper, Inspector, Roaring Gorge is printed out.
Roaring Gorge? Where's that?
Why, that's where the fraternity initiations take place. We'd better show this to Jim.
Okay. We're supposed to meet him in front of Science Hall at 7:15. We'll just have time to make it.
Capitals O-E-L over W-X-V. Written simply without any curlicues.
What do you suppose those initials stand for, Jim?
They're not initials, Kern.
They're not? What are they, then?
Look, if you turn this paper upside down, there, what do those letters become?
Why, Jim, the WXV becomes the Greek letters for lambda chi nu, and the OEL becomes 7:30.
That's right, Kern.
I don't get it.
Lambda chi mu is an honorary club for Rockland graduates, isn't it?
Yes. And I heard today that both Harkness and Atwood were pledged to it.
Where's Roaring Gorge, Fern?
Well, it's about a 20-minute drive from here. Although we could make it through the woods on foot in about 10 minutes.
Let's take the car, Jim.
All right, but we'll have to hurry.
What time is it now, Jim?
It's, 7:30, Inspector.
Roaring Gorge is just beyond that next hill.
Give the car everything it's got, Inspector.
All right, Jim.
That was a shot.
It came from the gorge. Turn to that lane at the right, Inspector.
Okay.
There's the gorge.
Pull up, Inspector, quick. Come on.
Okay. Doesn't seem to be anybody here.
Inspector, over this way.
Huh? What is it, Jim? Hey, who is that?
It's Atwood. He's been shot through the head.
Professor Craig must be guilty, Jim. Why, he was the only one who had a motive for killing both Harkness and Atwood.
Whoever sent that note to Atwood killed him, Fern. But I'm not quite ready to believe it was Craig.
Oh, Jim, why, it must have been.
Well, everyone at the club disclaims all knowledge of the note.
Really, Jim, I can't understand you. A motive is always the first thing you look for in a murder case. And, well, here you have a perfect motive. And you're not willing to accept it.
Well, Jim, we can all go home now. The Rockland murders are solved.
Oh, that's wonderful, Inspector. Who did it?
Professor Craig.
The evidence against Craig is purely circumstantial, Inspector.
Not quite, Jim. I have a witness who saw him leave his house at 7 o'clock last night and head toward the shortcut to Roaring Gorge.
You've checked the distance, I suppose?
Sure I have. A man could cover the distance between Craig's house and the gorge in 23 minutes by walking fast.
Mm-hmm. Who's the witness you spoke about?
Lawrence Treat.
Does Craig admit he left his house at 7 o'clock?
No. He claims he left at 7:15, but he admits he walked toward the woods behind the library. Well, Jim, I'm driving Craig into headquarters. You coming along?
No, Inspector. I'll join you later.
You're not convinced about Craig?
Well, I'd like to check a few more things here before I close my books on this case. Now, let me get these facts straight, Mr. Treat. You say you were walking past Professor Craig's house at 7 o'clock. and saw him come out and head for the shortcut to Roaring Gorge?
That's right, Mr. Brandon.
Then you strolled up Maple Walk leisurely, noticed Miss Collier, the inspector, and me in front of Science Hall at 7:15?
Yes.
None of us remembers seeing you on Maple Walk.
All of you seemed to be interested in a piece of paper you were holding.
That's right. Where did you go after seeing us, Mr. Treat?
I turned back and headed for home.
Craig claims he left his house at 7:15. But since you were opposite Science Hall at that time, you must have passed Craig's house 10 or 15 minutes before that. You see, the whole question of Craig's innocence or guilt hinges on that time element.
I understand. If Craig didn't leave his house until 7:15, he couldn't possibly have arrived at Roaring Gorge at 7:30 when you heard the shot.
That's right. But the time schedule of your walk is conclusive evidence that you saw Craig leave his house at 7.
Well, you say Craig admits to that little incident about sending his dog back into the house as he was leaving. Well, that proves I saw him, doesn't it?
Yes. Otherwise, I'd be inclined to believe you saw someone else come out of his house at 7 o'clock.
I'm sure it was Professor Craig, Mr. Brandon.
Well, the inspector said the case was solved. And after this little talk with you, Mr. Treat, I'm inclined to agree with him.
Jim, what in the world do you expect to find up here in the tower at Founders Hall?
I want to get a bird's-eye view of the entire campus, Fern.
What for?
There's a strange angle to this case that... Fern, I've got it. The library cupola is the focal point, and it's within 10 minutes walking distance of the gorge.
The library cupola? What does that have to do with it?
Come on, Fern. I have Atwood's key. We're going to take a look at that cupola.
Jim, the first part of your theory was right. A man could stand right here in this cupola and, with the aid of binoculars, command a view of both Craig's house and the front of Science Hall.
And he'd be within 10 minutes walking distance of Roaring Gorge.
That's right. Oh, Jim.
Yes?
Look, Mr. Treat and Dean Clapper are in a huddle down there at the side door. Do you suppose they're coming up here?
Fern, we've got 1 minute to muff this case or solve it. Here. Take these old chemistry books Harkness and Atwood used. Yeah. Open them up and pretend you're taking notes.
All right, Jim.
Tell anyone who comes into this room that Jim Brandon has found the motive for the Rockland murders and that you know what that motive is.
Jim, where are you going?
It's time for the Avenger to enter this case, Fern. Listen. Someone's coming. Get to work.
Now he will think you are alone, for he can't see the Avenger.
Why? Why, Miss Collier, what are you doing here?
I'm doing some research work for Jim Brandon, Mr. Treat.
Research work? In those books, my dear?
Why, yes. You see, Mr. Brandon has found the real motive for the murderers.
Brandon just wouldn't give up until he found my secret, would he?
Your secret?
Don't pretend you don't know what I'm talking about, Miss Collier. I've caught you red-handed.
Mr. Treat, put that gun away.
No. I intend to silence you and Brandon with this same gun that silenced Harkness and Atwood. Where is Brandon?
I don't know.
Well, I'll find him. But I'll take care of you first. So you know the secret, do you? Well, Harkness and Atwood almost worked out the puzzle of the Forrester formula in that book, too. But they didn't live to profit by it.
And neither will you, Lawrence Treat. The Avenger is here to take care of that.
The Avenger? Where is he?
My hand!
And now I have the gun, Mr. Treat.
Good work, young lady. Your aim was perfect. That heavy book hit him right on the wrist. Put your hands up and keep them up, Mr. Treat.
No. I chose to play a dangerous game, and I'll play it to the end.
Lawrence Treat was not afraid to kill, and he is not afraid to die.
No, Treat, don't jump!
Oh, Jim.
Gather up those books, Vernon, and take them to the car. I'll meet you there.
Jim, now that you've figured out the formula, what does it mean?
It's the famous Forrester formula for dyes, Vern. Everyone thought that old Forrester had taken it with him to the grave.
How did Treat get it?
Treat stumbled on references to it in Forrester's journals when he was writing his memoirs. He discovered that the key to the formula could be found in one of those old chemistry books Forrester had donated to the library.
What was the key, Jim?
Certain words and chemical formulas throughout the book were underlined in indelible pencil. But that information had to be arranged in a certain order to make sense. Treat went to work on it, but discovered that both Harkness and Atwood were working on those underlined passages, too. Those two boys were exceptionally brilliant, and Treat must have been afraid they'd beat him to the solution, so he killed them.
But all the evidence pointed to Professor Craig, Jim. What made you keep faith with him in spite of that?
Because I knew that the person who sent that note to Atwood wore a heavy ring on the little finger of his right hand. The ring had made deep marks on the paper.
Oh, and Professor Craig didn't wear such a ring.
No, but Treat did. I noticed it the first time I met him, so I decided to concentrate on him.
And it's a lucky thing for Professor Craig you did. Well, I guess this is one Founder's Day that Rockland College would rather forget.
Well, don't invite me out to your alma mater for the track meet next year, Fern. I can find enough murders to solve right here in the city. All characters, names, places, and plots used in the Avenger program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of
The Avenger.